Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th of May, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And let me apologize before we start. The pollen exploded and my throat closed up. So if I start to choke or die or suddenly sound like I'm talking like this, that's the reason.
Yeah, but before we get into that, we got to say congratulations to you, your family, and your daughter.
Yes.
For her great achievement.
Yes, my daughter now has a master's degree in art history. I'm very excited about that. It means I can stop paying for her education. I'm very excited about that. No. I'm just very excited. She did great. She also has a summer internship at the Tucson Museum of Art. So if anybody needs a truly kick-ass museum registrar, she's your person.
There you go.
So I'm very excited about that. I am just thrilled and over the moon. Also, by the way, before we do the news, there's one other thing I want to say by way of clarification. My wife is doing a Kiva loan for her stand at the market. She needs a bunch of people to loan her a minimum of $25. And so I put that out on my Facebook, and a lot of people wrote back and saying, is this real or have you been hacked?
Yeah.
It's real, and that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not trying to
go any further.
Talk it here, but I'm just saying that it's real. So those of you who are contemplating loaning her a bit of money, that's a legit thing. All right, I think we've got all that out of the way. So,
yeah.
By now...
All the formalities. Now let's get down to the computer stuff. Maybe.
By now, I'm sure you've heard about the WannaCry ransomware that's been running rampant around the internet. It's one of the most virulent attacks we've ever seen, and it's still spreading. Tens of thousands of infections are spread over 150 countries on 6 continents. Some hospitals had to cancel outpatient appointments because they couldn't get at their records. FedEx was hit big, just to name a couple of institutions. This thing gets into your computer and encrypts all your computer files. It then demands $300 to $600 in Bitcoin and helpfully tells you how to pay. Experts estimate that over $250,000 have been paid out so far, but the interesting thing is that nobody's yet gotten a key to decrypt their files. This all came about because of a weakness in Windows called Eternal Blue. Microsoft gives better names to their problems than they do to their operating systems.
Yeah.
Eternal Blue. The NSA found it.
I guess you will be eternally blue if this hits you.
Exactly. The NSA found it, didn't tell anybody, and wrote an exploit which they'd been using for years. Unfortunately, the bad guys stole that exploit, and here we are. Interestingly, Microsoft released a patch for it last month, but many people did not update. In fact, Microsoft took the unprecedented step of patching every version of Windows going back to XP. That's right, they actually put out a fix for XP. But all those people who ignored the update or are so proud of having blocked updates so they didn't have to go to Windows 10, well, they got hit hard. And, of course, pirated copies of Windows don't get the upgrade anyway. The worst thing is you don't even have to do anything to become infected. The worm, which will also spread through email and social media, can wander around the internet sniffing out vulnerable computers. That means you don't even have to do anything to become infected. What stopped it was a couple of security guys. They noticed that WannaCry checked an unregistered domain, so they registered the domain in hopes of capturing the data it was sending. Turns out the worm relied on the fact that the domain was not actually there, and when it did get registered, that acted as a sort of a kill switch. But don't get smug. Variants that don't have the kill switch are coming. What can you do if you're infected? Not much, as it turns out. There is a tool called WannaWiki that might help If you haven't turned off your computer and the in-memory prime numbers used to generate the encryption key haven't been overwritten, chances of that are slim, quite frankly. You can pay the ransom, but that hasn't worked out for anybody yet. Best bet is to reformat your hard drive and reinstall the operating system and all your programs from scratch.
And then restore from your backup.
Having a clone of your hard drive isn't going to help. No one knows how long this virus has been sitting out there waiting to activate, so you don't know if your clone is infected. Once you've installed a clean copy of your OS and programs, restore all your files from your nightly backups. You are backing up nightly, right? And don't open any emails. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is WannaCry ransomware. And your choices are, I back up every night. I back up sort of regularly. I backed up once, I think, and going commando, baby. So far, 27 of you voted, 14 of you have lied and said you back up every night. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll
you think?
So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum in the list is the poll discussion, and the currently the first poll discussion is 20 May 17 WannaCry ransomware. Two people have stuff in there, and you should add your comments, thoughts, suggestions.
Well, like we were telling
polite ones, in there.
We were telling folks last week the best thing to do is just shut the computer off.
Well, here's the problem with that. First, though, let me say you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. The problem with turning the machine off is if you are running anything from XP up to 7, in memory, the way this thing was written, they did not erase the two prime numbers. The large random prime numbers that they use to generate the key. If you shut the machine off, those keys are lost. If the machine is still on and your whatever you've been doing has not overwritten that point in memory, there is a tool that will get back those two keys and let you decrypt your data.
Gotcha. And with most of these ransomware attacks, you don't know it's happening until it's too late, and your files are already encrypted.
Right.
You suddenly can't open a file, and you get the encryption notice.
Like I say, a lot of this stuff, you know, the emails and all that stuff, folks, and we've been saying this for years, if you have to think more than 2 seconds about whether you should open that or not, delete it.
Well, and that's...
People don't think. That's the problem.
Oh, my God. We had another customer this week came in, and you know, sign popped up on her computer and said she had a virus. And so she called the phone number. She let them into her computer.
Yeah.
And they produced a fake contract with her signature on it, obviously in a script font.
Yes.
So she's trying to dispute her credit card, and the bad guys are saying, no, she signed this contract. You know, don't take the money away from us.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a problem. First, never call those things. I actually found the... I took a screenshot when... the one I got here. The pop-up that said I had a Windows virus.
Oh, yeah, Windows virus. Yeah, I remember that.
I got that. I have a screenshot of that still. It's kind of amazing. The lengths they'll go to trick you, and that's all called social engineering. And it is the most successful form of hacking. If you can get a person to do it for you by just handing over the keys to the kingdom, then you win. And and that's what all this social engineering, that's what this you've been infected, call this number, blah, 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 is all about. So, look, if you're not doing backups, I'm honest about this. If you got hit by this malware infection and you do not have backups of your data, don't call us. There's nothing we can do except commiserate with you.
Yeah, if you want a shoulder to cry on, we can do that.
Yeah, but we can't fix it. We can't help you because the fix is restore from backup. And again, if you've got a clone of your machine, well, that's great. How do you know it's clean?
Yep.
You don't. So what you want to do is restore from original media. You know, it's pretty going to be pretty clear that your DVD of Windows is clean. If you got it right from Microsoft, because nothing else can change it, there you are. You'll have load of updates, but it'll be clean. So that's okay. The problem is not the problem then becomes your programs. For those of you who buy all your programs and you have an actual copy, whether you've downloaded it and put it on a thumb drive or you have it on a DVD or whatever, that's great too. But now there's your data. And if you haven't been backing up your data, or as we see heartbreakingly so many times, you haven't been backing up all your data, because not everything puts the data under documents. If you haven't been backing up, then there really, truly is nothing we can do for you. There's no magic. Like I said, there's a WannaWiki, which theoretically can help with some slight cases of the infection, but not all of them.
And some of the early news stories were saying that the outbreak had been stopped because the one researcher found the unregistered domain and registered it. But no, it hasn't stopped. It's still running out. Yeah, you're still vulnerable.
There are variants that don't use that kill switch.
And the other problem for a number of folks, and I had one person this happened to, is you know how now a lot of the companies are preloading their Windows. Instead of giving them the CD, it's on another partition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
dangerous.
I've got one client that got messed up, tried to go back to the original factory install back to it. It wouldn't let me. It said, sorry, invalid copy. It totally trashed that copy that was on a separate partition on the hard drive.
One thing you can do is you can make a DVD copy of Windows. Even if it came on a separate partition, et cetera, you can make a DVD copy, and you really, really, really should do that.
Yeah.
If you don't help yourself, we can't help you.
Well, that was the thing also. She goes, well, don't you have a copy that you could just put it back on? No. I don't even know the key number in that.
Right.
And a lot of computers aren't putting the key on the side anymore.
No. I know.
So you can't. You know, it used to be that you could use any physical disk as long as you had the key.
Right. Well, they want you to send it.
It's important. Yeah.
Well, they want you to send it back to the company. And that's what I told her she's going to have to do. I said, you're going to have to send it back to the company. And it's like, I can't. Yeah. You know.
Now it's getting even worse. You have to, it can be better in some respects, but it's more annoying for the customers. You will buy your key online, and so even when you get a physical box, usually there's a key not in it.
Right.
You log in online, you create an account with Microsoft, and you put in the product code of the box to get the real key, and then that key is stored in your Microsoft account, which means you can get it back whenever you need to.
Assuming you remember your login from
Microsoft. And then
you got
to go through that, forgot your password mess, and if you still have that email address anymore. But it makes it a little easier because then the key doesn't rub off. I remember so many laptops you would get in where they put that sticker on the bottom.
Yes.
And the numbers had all rubbed off from you moving your computer around on the desk.
Yep. Well, laptops were notorious for that. They finally got wise and put it in where the battery was stored. You take the battery out, and that's where your key code was, because on a laptop...
Assuming now you've got a machine that you can remove the battery.
Yeah, well...
And that's getting...
Chromebooks, you can't do that. You wouldn't be able to do that, but yeah, most of them were doing that because the laptops were notorious for getting that wiped out.
Think I can on this one.
Nope. Some of the computers...
Well, maybe if I take off the whole bottom, maybe.
Yeah. We saw some model computers would have a little slide-out door with all the stickers. Because you look at a piece, you got what? You got four stickers on top, you got six stickers on the bottom. It's ugly.
It's ugly.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's a truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I love that walking bass. Love it. All right, back to the phones. Our first back to the phone. To the phones, Robin. Our first caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Hi. I called you a few weeks ago because I had purchased a Hewlett-Packard quad-core vintage. The processor was vintage late 2012, and the machine was released in 2013. It was a refurbished with Windows 10 on it, and so Windows Creator downloaded okay for me on that. That worked out well, but then I was doing some stuff and I bricked the machine. I couldn't boot with it, so that's why I want to tell you the next part, if I may.
Yeah.
Okay. So what prompted me to call you is because you were talking about people not getting recovery disks and you try and go to the recovery partition and nothing works. Well, the machine wouldn't boot at all, so I took out the drive. As I say, it was Windows 10. Took out the drive, attached to my other, to my Windows 7 box, and formatted the thing totally. You know, deleted all the partitions, formatted it, and then went and downloaded the Media Creator tool for Windows 10, and then I got the one that's, or I checked the choice of download Windows 10 for a different machine. So then I downloaded, put it on thumb drive. I had previously read that some of the machines that are coming out now from either refurbishers or whatever are the key is in the BIOS. So I said to myself, well, what have I got to lose? So I put the thumb drive in and when it asked me if I had a product key, I said I don't have a product key. And lo and behold, I didn't have any personal information on the computer, so I had nothing right. Lost that way. But I was able to reinstall Windows that way. Do you know about that sort of thing, about the key being in the BIOS in some machines?
On some machines it is. We don't assume it's there, and for most, particularly for most older machines, it is not.
And it usually needs an OEM Windows, not the generic Windows
right.
That you would download.
But as long as it worked, that's the important part.
What I might be afraid is it's in its 15 or 30-day demo or trial mode.
Well, you can see that on the screen, though.
Yeah, in the bottom right corner of the screen, there may be a it's hard to see because it's a faded white, activate Windows. And so you will not be able to activate Windows until you put in a valid key.
But check that. It may be fine. But
yeah,
check
I didn't see anything like that.
Yeah, check that. You know, it should be just above where the time is.
I hasn't been quite 30 days yet, but I'll check that out. I thought that might be a possibility for some people if they have that problem.
Maybe right. And if their computer is capable of running Windows 10 and
right,
yeah.
there's a whole lot of ifs. But if you have Windows 10 running, you should check out your
how to tell if you're activated.
Yeah, check to see if you're activated by looking in that lower right corner.
It should also be, I'm trying to look exactly where it is. It should also be in your control or system.
Right, if it's
control
Windows
panel under system.
Right, if it's Windows 10, you can right click on the start button, select system, and under Windows activation, it should say Windows is activation. Windows is activated.
Okay, that's good information. Now, now that I've got the thing going, can I make recovery disks now while I've got the thing going? Let's assume that it's not a trial version or whatever. How would I make the recovery disks?
Well, the recovery disk is that image of the Windows 10 you already have. What you want to make now is a backup of your whole computer. You could do a clone to another drive with something like Clonezilla.
Okay.
Or you could use a backup program. The Windows backup isn't too bad, but Windows Restore is a little iffy. So there are other backup programs you can get. Cobian Backup is one of them that we've talked about in the past. That has a free version to back up all your files.
Yeah, if you want to back up Windows itself, it's easy enough to do in 10.
Okay.
From the search piece of the taskbar, you know, down where Cortana is. Search for create a recovery drive and then select that when it shows up, and then that opens up the tool, and then say backup system files to the recovery drive and select next. And then it'll say what recovery drive, stick a USB in, is actually faster and easier than a CD these days. But you could use either. And then select it, and then select next, and then create, and then go get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
And if you want to back up everything on the computer, all your documents and stuff, well, see, right now you've got a virgin computer that you can always reinstall if you need to. When you start putting your own files and stuff on it, then you typically want to back up to another hard drive because they're just so much bigger and cheaper than flash drives or thousands of floppy disks or hundreds of CDs. I remember some of the backups we used to do with hundreds of floppy disks.
Or you can buy – well, let me finish this first. So when you're done with the backup, with the creation of a recovery disk drive, you might see delete the recovery partition from the PC. If you see that, and if you want to free up drive space, then do it. Otherwise, just select finish.
Well, now that part confused me because I'm creating, I think you said create the recovery like to maybe a thumb drive or whatever.
Right.
But now you're also saying it's asking me if I want to delete the recovery partition on the hard drive.
There may not be one, but I'm saying if you see that, you get to make a choice as to whether you want to or not.
Oh, okay.
You likely will not, but if you do, then I'm just being complete.
All right. Lastly, there is a, when I did all this, there is a recovery partition. It says it's a recovery partition, but it's like a very tiny thing. I don't know what it's for. I mean, I don't think it's a real recovery partition, though. It was just created when Windows was installed.
Right. If there's not much in it or you don't think it's useful and you do get that message, delete it. Otherwise, hard drives are so big nowadays, you're not going to miss the space anyway.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Now, wait. Let's go back now to backing up your data.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Once you've got the system created, assuming you've done nothing else, the likelihood that you have a clean copy of your system is good.
Okay.
So now the question is, what about your data? My suggestion is multiple backups. You can get a NAS, a network-attached storage. That's just a hard drive you plug into the same network that your computer is on, and then your machine can find it, and you can set up a backup to that using Windows Backup or whatever.
And the nice thing about a NAS is, since it's on your network, you can back up all your computers on that one drive.
Assuming it's big enough.
Yeah.
You can also back up to the cloud using things like Cobian or
Carbonite,
whatever, or you could just put Google Drive on your system and shoot things over by hand, but that then requires you to remember to do that every day. So an automated backup system is ideal.
Okay.
And so you should look into doing that. Everybody should be backing up at least daily, at the absolute longest amount of time. Every day.
Okay. I'm glad I'm recording you while I'm talking to you. Some of the stuff I'm not going to remember, but I can play back my recording and then fully absorb what you're telling me.
And, of course, we have the archive.
That's true, too. I forgot about that.
Right.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We hear from a lot of people that, you know, we ask if they have a backup, and it's, oh, yeah, I think I backed up about 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you probably just lost everything in the last 6 months then.
Yeah.
Well, the other
or
thing,
how often should I back up? How much do you want to lose?
Right. Yeah. That is the exact answer.
Yeah.
Or what they'll do is they see the D partition on their hard drive, and they figure, oh, I'll back it up to that.
Yep.
And they go ahead and do it. Yeah, it's on the D partition. You know what? Your hard drive is split into two parts or parts.
Right.
And that D partition is part of the original hard drive that, just crashed and can't get anything off of.
Yeah, that might help you if you lose a file, but it won't help you if you lose the entire disk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why it's, I mean, cloud storage.
What part is it's hard to understand? Do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think about it now because I have mine do it nightly. Yeah.
Crash
it's
plan.
Up there on the cloud, all of my photos and documents, and those are the critical things that, especially photos. I can't stress enough the photos. If you back up nothing else, your photos, because documents, you can usually recreate those. Yep, exactly. Like that one, you wouldn't want to lose out on that memory ever.
Ever.
And that's why, you know, back up your photos, if nothing else. Because I have had more folks come in and say, oh, gee, you know, I meant to back up, but I got all these photos that are very precious to me, and I can't, you know, I can't get them back. Sorry.
That's right. You can't get them back. I'm sorry, but that's the way it works.
Yeah, documents may not be that big a deal. Email is probably still on your mail server. But those photos that you cannot get back, well, I guess you could always have another kid.
Yeah, right. But start from scratch.
Yeah, would you cry if you lost all your photos? And so most of the commercial online backup services are about $5 a month per computer. CrashPlan has a neat option where you put a hard drive in someone else's computer, a friend of yours that you trust, for example, and you back up to them. And now they're your cloud. And you could let them back up to you, and that's free. Completely free because you're just backing up to somebody else. But with Google Photos, unlimited photos that are of less than 16 megapixels, which most of them are these days.
You can also have it. You can also have it when you upload it. You can have it reformatted to 16 megapixels.
Yep. Yep.
So no matter what the original was, which you still have on your hard drive and can back up separately, it'll be up there in the 16 megapixel format.
Well, that's what I love about my Google phone.
16 megapixels.
Everything, you know, no matter what I take, the photos, boom, automatically goes up there by night, you know, by that evening. And I just share them with my wife so she can get at them too. And they're there. I mean,
and
I don't have to think.
It's unlimited storage.
Yes.
My wife's been doing the same thing, only for some reason, and I never looked because she said she did it. She was backing up to Verizon's cloud, which is 50 gigs, I think.
Yeah.
But that's not a lot when you take a lot of pictures, particularly, let's say, at your daughter's graduation from graduate school, just as a random sample.
Just as off your head.
And she filled the space. I said, you can't fill the space. She said, look. And I said, oh, that's the Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll fix that. So when we got home, because I'm on green light, and it happened in like 4 seconds, I switched her over to Google. Thank you very much. I switched her over to Google
Sign
Drive.
Language.
And now she's got unlimited space for any picture she ever takes. It's all good.
Yep.
It's all good.
And the same with documents. I've gone to where now documents, anything that's important, I create it in Google Docs. It's saved up there free. So, again, I don't have to worry about backing it up. It's just there. It takes out the worry, folks, if you just set the things up. We're giving you tools that you can use that you don't even have to think about. You set it up once, and it happens.
Yep.
Like I say, any documents or anything else I might do on my computer at night, every night, because I just turn my monitors off. I don't turn the computer off. I just turn the monitors off, and at night, in the background, boom, it's uploading them to there right after midnight, and I wake up in the morning when I come down. And it says it, you know, it's done its nightly backup. Okay, good. That's
all you need to know.
I don't have to think about it because...
And it's not just Google. Microsoft has their drive, which I do not believe is unlimited.
No.
Apple has their iDrive, which I believe is not unlimited. But, you know, whichever way you go is the way you go. But
you can still use Google on a Microsoft computer or an Apple computer.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
And so you can take advantage, no matter what you're on, of that unlimited storage. I'm on Linux, and I use Google Drive constantly. So do that. Get yourself, take advantage of the free stuff that's out there and available to save your bacon.
Because it's going back to, I mean, I have literally, over the years, had so many folks come in and say, you know, they lost the photos of this or that, and they don't know how to get them back because I tell them they got to send it off to DriveSaver. Maybe they can get it back.
For thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's going to cost them a lot of money. Well, I don't know if I want to pay. Well, then you know what? Evidently, their photos aren't that important to
you. Now we know an upper limit you will not pay to get your photos back.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, if you just take the time and do it. I mean, I get it. Back in the day, you know, we tell folks burn it to a CD and that involves some time. But now we're giving you tools that you can use that don't take any time other than just to initially set it up and have it do it in the background.
And it does it automatically. Right. So many times we've heard from people who have bought a backup drive and never got around to backing anything up. It's still sealed in the box.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Steve from Greece on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a quick statement, I guess. If you have a separate physical drive on your computer and this ransomware comes through, the data on that other physical drive should be safe.
Not necessarily.
No.
A lot of the ransomware will attack any attached drive. Some of it even will attack network drive. So if you're mounted, you know, say your G drive is another computer or a server, that can get attacked as well.
Yeah, because now, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, it will, instead of just, you know, looking at just the C drive, it looks at the computer. So the computer and any attached drives, whether it's a C drive, a D drive, or an E, and network drives, it goes out to all of those and looks.
Oh, well, that's, I gave a friend some bad advice. I'm going to have to call him. A quick question on backup drives.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a huge price range, a huge speed difference. You don't really need much speed if you're doing a backup drive, and you're not doing any work with it, correct or incorrect?
Generally, yes. And your first backup is going to take a very long time because it does everything. But then most backup programs will do only changed files. So that's not very long anyway. But as for your first backup, yeah, it'll take a while. Doesn't matter how long it takes. Just let it run overnight.
Yeah. Do it at night before you go to bed.
Yeah. An inexpensive in terms of speed drive. Is okay, because again, you're right, you're only going to be doing it overnight, you don't care.
One of the things I do like I usually use a 3.5-inch drive for backup. They're physically bigger drives that often have a fan in the housing, because I leave my backup drive, now here I'm going to contradict my own earlier statement,
right.
I leave my backup drive connected all the time, so it always backs up. And so it's always running, it's always spinning. I like having the idea of a fan in there keeping it cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But then there is a danger that if you get attacked, it can hit your external drive too. So what some people do, and as so many people running small businesses these days, what you should really do is rotate multiple backup drives. So that put one in a fire safe, put one in another building. We talk about 3-2-1 backup.
They're so cheap nowadays.
They're relatively cheap, yeah. You should have at least 3 copies of your data on 2 different media,
mm-hmm.
and one of them should be off-site. If there's a fire, flood, theft, your computer and your backup drive sitting right next to it could both be lost.
Yep.
And one thing you can do programmatically, that is from the command line, you can mount and unmount drives in both Windows and Linux, and I think in Mac as well. So one of the things that you can do is in your backup batch file, you can mount a drive, back up to it, and then unmount it. That way, if you do get caught by an antivirus, by a malware program like the ransomware, it doesn't see the drive, it doesn't know to mount the drive, and so that drive is safe.
All right.
Does that make sense?
It does. Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of doing it that way either. You guys are clever.
Thank you.
Hey, we try.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
There was an early virus, and I don't remember its name, but it was tiny. It was like 100K. It was such a tiny virus, and it had an SMTP mail server built in.
Yep.
So it was a mass mailing virus, so it would read your address book. And many of the early mass mailing viruses you could catch because you'd see now hundreds and hundreds of messages in your outbox in your mail program. And so you could stop it. So this specific virus made its own SMTP server, its own mail server in the virus, so it didn't need to use your outbox.
Very stealth.
It just sent it by itself.
Yep.
That's why a lot of companies that run their own mail servers, which is happening a lot less, frankly, now that Google is out there. But a lot of companies that run their own mail servers, you don't need a beefy box in terms of the program, but you need, you know, if you've got a 50 employees or 600 employees, you need a beefier box depending how many of those you have. And disk storage is far more important than anything else. So a lot of people often run their web servers and their mail servers on the same box. That's got pros and cons, but in terms of size of the server itself, they're both pretty small, frankly.
So
you don't need a beefy box to run them in.
One of the things that we've run into in our store recently is we just switched to a new, much faster internet provider. We went from 5 megabit to 60.
That's not bad.
It is so fast.
It's not good, it's not bad.
We looked at fiber, and it was expensive where we were, but 60 is so much better than 5 that it probably wouldn't have mattered.
To you, too.
Yeah. But one thing we've run into is email lists that most mail servers will stop you after a couple hundred sent messages,
right?
Thinking you have a mass mailing virus. Well, we're connected to a business class internet provider. Their limit is 1,000 a day, which is a lot, but we've got 5,000 people on our mailing list.
Yeah.
So we're trying to figure out a way to get them to up the limit for us.
Or go to MailChimp. MailChimp lets you send out 12,000 a day.
Yeah, but you have to pay a monthly fee for them.
No, it's 12,000 free. I think. At least it used to be.
We did look into them.
12,000 a day free, I think it is. Don't quote me, but something along that line. Or you could run your own mail server and do whatever you want and get blacklisted yourself.
Yeah. That's the problem is you don't want to get blacklisted by the
darned
providers.
If you do and darned if you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why so many of them do have the limit. That tells you, you know, you can only send so many at a time so that you're not a spammer.
Yeah.
I get that. I do. But you're right. If you're on business class.
12,000 a month.
Oh, a month.
But only 2,000 people on your list.
Okay.
So we looked at that. So I can make this list of 2,000, delete it, make another list of 2,000 and delete it.
Right.
That's annoying.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. That makes a lot more sense. I don't know what to tell you. You can run your own mail server. I did that for a lot of years.
But it's so time consuming, keeping up with the stuff that can get in there, the junk mail and everything else. That could be a full-time job for some individual.
I had a guy work for me who did that pretty much full-time.
Yeah, it can do, and people don't believe it. You know, nowadays with Google, it's easier to just let somebody else handle it. It's cheaper. You don't have to pay them vacation time.
I think Google's daily limit is $250.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be so much easier.
And we even have Google Apps. Or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah, Google for Business.
Google for... That's not even that anymore.
No, G-Suite. Something else, yeah. G Suite, that's it.
Yeah. And so you'd think that would be better. And the bulk mail program we're using has the right header flags in it that are supposed to tell the mail... Well, supposed to tell the mail server this isn't junk mail, this is legitimate bulk mail. So, and which when I first read about that, my first thought was, okay, so the bad guys can put that header in... And the fake junk mail, too.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to read up on what this says. Sending limits. 2,000 messages a day is the daily sending limit.
So I think that's usually what we do is we use our Gmail address to send out messages until it hits the limit, and then we switch to our other server until it hits that limit.
Oh, geez.
Well, if it's limited by email address, then you can make as many email addresses as you want.
It's sent messages per day.
Oh, per day, per account.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. What's up, Scott?
Well, what's up is that I just set up my third backup.
Yeah. There you go.
Now I have 8 terabyte Seagate backup. For my iMac here. But I'm bothered by my first two backups. When they reach their limit, they stop backing up. What's going on?
Which backup program are you using?
What's it called?
Time Machine?
Time Machine, yeah.
Time Machine is supposed to tell you the backup is full, and it will start deleting the oldest backups to make room for more.
It wasn't doing that.
There's an option.
In fact, one of my backups said it hadn't backed up for 24 days, which is, and then my other one just stopped backing up. So that's why I decided to get a new backup.
There's often a little red eye for information on that backup message, and it may tell you why it wasn't backing up. But in the options, you want to make sure you turn on the notify when backups are deleted. But what a lot of people do is when their backup drive is full, they just go out and get another one. Because the nice thing about having that historical backup is you don't know when the problem occurred. So you go to find a file and you can't find it. Was it lost yesterday or was it lost 6 months ago? And so having right. that historical backup, how far back in time, that's why Apple calls it Time Machine. It lets you go back in time to find the way your files were back then is nice. And so a lot of people just keep hard drives. As Dave said, hard drives are so cheap, but, you know, just throw another one on there and let it keep going.
Well, I thought it just first said that it would just erase old ones when it got new ones, but I don't know why it wasn't doing that.
It should, yeah, and there may be that information button next to the message saying that it hadn't backed up, and it may give you more information about why it hadn't backed up.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all I had. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Good luck.
And so that's a choice that a lot of backup drives make. Now, Windows backup, I have found, at least in Windows 7, when your drive is full, it stops, and mm-hmm. you get messages that your drive is full. So then you have to manually delete the old backups or decide to put a new drive on, which is a little annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But I can sort of see their point. Don't delete anything without telling
first
me. Would
checking,
be nice.
Yeah.
So it should ask.
Assuming.
Yeah, do you want to delete this backup or do you want to get a new drive rather than just stopping? And hoping you notice that it hasn't finished backing up, or hasn't backed up in a while.
Right.
And usually those, the Time Machine, I know, is a week. If you haven't backed up in a week, you get the warning. I kind of wish it would warn you sooner than that.
Like daily?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can always go and look when your last backup was. But the...
people forget so easily.
Yeah. And
with other things going on in life and all that.
I'll get to it later, and suddenly 2 years go by, and your hard drive dies.
Yep. Oh, I meant to back up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then. Everything's restored. Yep. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the number of people that have only backed up shortcuts is horrible.
Yeah.
We had one gentleman that had come in, and he brought in a stack of CDs of all his Quicken files. If, you know, for 10 years, he's been backing up his Quicken data. We look at the CDs. It has a shortcut to his file. Actually, it was a shortcut to the Quicken application.
Yeah.
Not even his data
file. Yep.
And we're saying, sorry, that wasn't
Quicken,
the right file.
Quicken, I forget what I pay, but I have them, that also go up to the Quicken site.
Yep.
And it's, I think it's once a week now. I've got it as part of my backup anyways to the cloud.
Yeah.
But... as part of my Google storage I do, it goes up to there, but then any of my other Quicken stuff is to the Quicken website, and they come in. I believe I got it set up for Saturday nights. It automatically takes whatever file I have and uploads it as a backup.
Unfortunately, Quicken Online Backup is no longer accepting new signups, and they're discontinuing their service March 1st, 2017.
Oh, really?
We
already had that.
Yes. We recommend that you back up somewhere else.
Well, you better check.
Whoa, I did not. I just had it set up.
No new subscriptions or renewals will be accepted after March 1st. So whenever your current subscription expires.
Oh, okay. Well, then I've still got... Yeah,
so you're probably still working until it expires.
Yeah, because I didn't do that. It was... Oh, heck, it had to be around Christmas time that I got an offer, you know, sign up for this and that, and they gave me...
When you buy your new version of Quicken, you get a discount on online backup.
That's what I did. I got to the 2016 version, and they included that in with the discount.
Should be good till this Christmas.
Well, it's around Thanksgiving time or so. So I'm good for now.
We've mentioned that in the past. It's great having a backup program, but check it now and then to make sure it's really backing up. Check your last backup.
Well, like I say,
look at the backup files and do a spot check and see if they are still being backed up properly.
Well, I'm also, you know, like I say, faithfully, I back it up automatically to the Google Cloud. That's part of my storage. It's not Google, you know, as far as the documents or photos.
Right.
And I take up a little space and I just back it up to my hard drive, you know, on my desktop, and then I shove it up there.
You get 15 gig, which doesn't sound like a lot.
It's plenty.
When the pictures and the documents are free.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest of all of the cloud storage companies. Google giving you 15 gigs.
Right.
Apple is 5 gigs. I think Microsoft is 3 or 4. But if you had an old Xbox account, then it was 20.
Right. Dropbox is 50, I think.
Two for free.
Get 50.
If you refer other people, you get more space.
Oh, maybe.
50 sounds like you're paying for it.
I'm not. Trust me. Trust me, I know this.
Yeah.
All right, that music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But shockingly, you're going to get the opportunity to do it again because we're only going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Some weeks, it runs longer than others. Oh, this is not bad. This is not bad today. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And this is, and I know you're going to be shocked to hear this. I hope you're sitting down. This is Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are able to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966 5299. Toll free 800 790 0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, it's Soundbites. I'm member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we read the news, let me again reiterate what I said at the top of the hour, because I know there are some people who only tune into the second half of the hour. A lot of people have written to me to ask if my Facebook account has been hacked. Because there's a thing up on there, my wife, who has a stand at the public market, has applied for a Kiva loan, where if she gets a bunch of people to sign up and loan her $25 or more, they're up to $6,000, whatever the number is. The point is this. That's a legitimate request. It is from me, so if you are feeling generous and want to loan her some money, that's great. It is a real thing, and I'm not trying to plug it. I'm just trying to answer the many people who've asked me if that was legit or not. It is legit. Now, on to the news. Over the last couple weeks, the internet has gone phone crazy. There are about 50 leaks every day, each one purporting to be the latest and greatest information about some imminent phone or other. iPhone, OnePlus 5, Galaxy S8, even the venerable old Nokia was in the news. Actually, the Nokia was in the news for two reasons this week. The fact is that about half of these leaks contradict the other half, and the real truth is that nothing really exciting is being planned. Two cameras instead of one? Meh. Slightly better sound? Meh. Slightly faster chipset? Slightly more memory? Slightly better camera software? Meh, meh, and meh. Flexible screens are kind of fun once somebody figures out what to do with them. An inch-thick phone that almost wraps around your wrist isn't really all that exciting, to be honest. So far, the most exciting thing I've seen in the field of smartphones, aside from the return of the sort of unlimited data, sort of, is the hologram. A team of scientists from RMIT University in Australia and the Beijing Institute of Technology have designed the world's thinnest hologram. It is said the hologram is capable of being integrated into everyday products such as smartphones. The work was led by RMIT and claims the holographic technology can be seen without 3D goggles and is 1,000 times thinner than a human hair. The academics dubbed the technology a nano-hologram.
A nanogram?
A nanogram. Squeeze here. At present, the constraints that hold back holographic technology lie in the limits of optical thickness. Regular holograms modulate light to project the illusion of a three-dimensional shape, but this needs to be within the parameters of the optimal thickness limit. Computer-generated holograms are far too large to fit atop smartphones and therefore have limited practical application. Now, the team behind this work has developed a 25-nanometer hologram using topological insulator material. Topological insulator material, or TIM, which is easier for me to say. It has a lower reflective index on the surface layer, but an ultra-high refractive index in bulk. This thin insular film can enhance the holographic image without sacrificing its compact design. The nano hologram is fabricated using a simple and fast direct laser writing system, which makes that design suitable for large-scale uses in mass manufacture. Theoretically, the technology may be able to fit inside smartphones and other devices, but there is still work to be done. The next step is to shrink the technology even farther, or further, so that it can become suitable for integration upon LCD and smartphone screens, effectively producing a holographic device in your pocket. For medical diagnostics to education, data storage, defense, and cybersecurity, 3D holography has the potential to transform a range of industries, and this research brings that revolution one critical step closer. So are you ready for a hologram-capable phone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Can you imagine it? You hold up your phone and it just projects stuff into the air.
There are
that could be dangerous in a car.
There are some phones now that have Pico projectors built into them.
Right.
So that it sort of does that, but you need a screen to project it on.
Well, it's bad enough when you, and I've seen it, been driving along, you see folks, and they got the phone resting up in their steering wheel, and they're doing FaceTime with somebody. Hello?
Yeah.
Try driving.
I get scared using mine as the GPS map.
Yeah.
Let alone.
Well, I use that Waze, and I got it in a mount.
Yeah.
Yep. And I just start that, and you can just listen, and they tell you, and I love that program in that. It will turn around and let you know if there are any accidents up ahead. Everything. Yep. Road information is, you know, because people
faster route may be available.
Yeah, and people are constantly updating it. Oh, there's an accident here. We used it all the way back from Arizona, and it was fantastic. Because at one point, I got off at one wrong turn when we were trying to go through Dallas. And no problem. It redirected me, got me right back on the expressway, and it's like, cool.
Yeah,
but I avoided quite a bit of rush traffic.
Yeah, I love when I set up a thing like that and it says, you're on the fastest route. You will reach your destination by blah PM or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Waze now has a new thing. You can record your own directions.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Turn right, you moron.
I like the celebrity ones.
The celebrity ones are pretty cool. You can also, I suppose, now that you can record your own, you can have your significant or indeed insignificant other record them for you, I suppose.
Yeah.
Hmm.
My wife nags at me enough. I don't need my phone. Did you see the XKCD about the rental car? They've only got two cars left. One of them is a murder car, and we think it's haunted. And the other one, the GPS is stuck trying to get to Seattle, and you can't turn it off. Ugh. All right, we'll take the GPS car. Turn left, recalculating. Make a U-turn, recalculating. Make a U-turn, recalculating. Make a U-turn, recalculating. Are you back already? Yeah, we'll take the murder car.
Yeah. Popular choice. The these things are out there. Everybody's got rumors, and everybody's trying to one-up the next person with rumors and. I don't know. I've looked at the Samsung Galaxy S8. It looks pretty terrific. I've looked at the OnePlus 5, which really looks terrific.
I'm Galaxy, though, right now. After I got burned on the Note 7.
Yeah, Samsung's going to have to do a lot.
Samsung's got it. I'm sorry. I've got that Google phone,
Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, and right now, you know, I've got the XL, and I love that it didn't come with all that bloatware.
Well, that's the big thing.
Yeah. That is the biggie.
Yeah.
And it does, you know, like I say, and I don't even have to think about it. It automatically set it up once I signed up my Google account to set the phone up. Again, all my photos, I don't even have to think about it. It just uploads them, my contacts, everything else. It's just there. And the camera, the pictures on that are unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That you know, the big thing about the OnePlus 5 it's got very close to the same specs, but it's about half the price. And that's very appealing. But now they're saying by the time it comes out, the OnePlus 5 may not be that much cheaper. OnePlus is a company known for less expensive phones, but if they're going to bring it out at only $100 or $200 cheaper, then probably not. But
we were just talking with someone in our store this morning about we used to have cell phone contracts.
Right.
So the typical smartphone has always cost $700, $800, $900.
Mm-hmm.
But you pay on a contract. So, you know, you pay, say, $100 a month. Say $50 a month of that was to pay off the cost of the phone, and $50 a month is the cost of the service. Well, now most of the carriers have stopped doing contracts, and they have payment plans. So you pay $100 a month, which is $50 for the phone and $50 for the service.
Yeah, right.
But since it's a payment plan, when you pay off the phone, your cell phone bill goes down because you've paid off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
In the old contract days, you were paying for your phone forever, even after you paid it off.
Yep.
And the phone companies loved that.
Yep.
Well, yeah, they made more money on it.
And so now companies like OnePlus, HTC is doing a couple of them. They're doing relatively decent smartphones in that $100 to $200 range flat, no contract, you know, no payments. And some of it is because maybe it's last year's model, last year's chip, so it's cheaper. But they're doing it for what's the new word now? Emerging markets.
Right.
Where and in less affluent areas where you can't afford to pay $500 for a phone. And so having a pretty decent, mostly Android, because Android is free.
Yeah.
A smartphone for, you know, $100, $200 is really good.
And what's the company now? The guy, remember, that he was with Verizon, can you hear me now? Went to that other company?
Sprint.
Yeah. And Sprint, their coverage is really starting to gain.
Well, and that's the point of his commercials. Is all the phone companies are pretty much the same now. So
yeah, 1%. They can't sit there and say that Verizon covers more areas. Yep. I mean, for the most part now, Sprint is covering just as many areas, and Verizon should start looking over their shoulder because they're slowly gaining on them, and as far as their plans and everything else.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't compete on coverage anymore or speed because they're all about the same. So now it's people are starting to compete on price.
Yeah.
At our company, we just switched everyone to T-Mobile and cut our phone bill in half, and we haven't had any problems with coverage.
Yeah,
right.
And a lot of them, like SprintNet, they'll buy out your contract. You know, if you're paying on a phone or that, too, they'll give you up to so much on it to come over with them. So, you know, it's worth looking at if you can cut your phone bill.
Yeah, and a lot of people are, they're used to the carrier they have, and it never occurs to them to change carriers. That was, again, a customer this morning, oh, we've needed an AT&T phone. Not really, no.
No.
Any phone. It used to be that if you had a Verizon phone, you call Verizon for free. If you had an AT&T phone, you call AT&T for free. But pretty much nowadays, the industry has shifted. And most of the time with your plans, you'll get unlimited voice minutes, unlimited texting, and you're just paying for cellular data.
Which is nonsense because it's all data.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that, yeah, that they know what people are doing now. When we used to use a phone to make phone calls, you paid by the minute.
Right.
Now you're using your smartphone to surf the web and get your email and read Facebook, and so that's where they're getting you. And so unlimited voice minutes and unlimited texting, they just throw in for free because they can, because they know they're going to get you on the data. But again, as Nick said, it's all data now.
Yeah.
They're all using voice over IP with a digital circuit. It's not analog phone anymore.
They just want you to think that it's costing them more.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of folks don't look into it.
And some of the smaller carriers, like, what is it, Cricket or Clear, that you get at, say, Walmart or Kmart, they're using the same Verizon and AT&T backbone lines, but they're able to offer lower pricing. Partly because they don't have giant national ads paying celebrities for their spokesmanship.
Right.
So you don't. The carrier you have almost doesn't matter anymore because they've all had to even out because that's the way the industry is sort of shaken up.
Google even used to have text messaging search. You could send a text message and get a search result back. They killed that too, which bothers me. I don't think you can actually turn the Google Pixel into a wireless charging phone, can you? Because you can't take the back off of that.
There's a couple of wireless charging plates you sort of stick to the back of your phone, and then you have your plate on the desk. But it's nicer if that wireless charging is built
in. But the thing that is, though, is I can say my phone gets down to 5%. I can quick hook it up to a charger as long as, within 15 minutes, it's back up to 80%.
Don't I get that, and that's nice, but I've got a wireless charger in the head of my bed. I got a wireless charger in my car. I got a wireless charger in my desk.
Well might. I don't know. I haven't bothered because,
I don't think you can take the back off of those.
Yeah, I haven't tried.
Yeah, I don't
Like I say, most of mine, I charge it every night, and, in the morning, I'm always, using it, and I'm even at the end of the day, I'm still at, 60 to 55%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's texting and calling and everything else.
There's some new wireless charging technology in development that I've been reading about. Right now, when they say wireless charging, that means you don't have to plug a wire in. You still have to set your phone on the pad.
Right.
So they're trying to extend that range. So right now, it has to be a range of zero from your charging emitter.
Right.
So if they can make that range a foot, 2 feet, then you don't have to.
Well, we've said this before. If you could see in the electromagnetic spectrum, you wouldn't be able to see because it's everywhere. It's everywhere, and so
the goal is that when you walk into a room,
why can't we take advantage of
it? Just starts charging.
Right,
you don't have to actually set it on a pad. I hear stories from people who the charger's on their nightstand, and they knock it off the charger at night, and wake up in the morning and your phone is dead because it wasn't charging all night.
Yep.
So as long as we can have that, remote wireless charging, that's the next thing.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, get on the line. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we go back to the phones, I've lost it. I don't know where it went. Hold on.
Too many windows open.
too many windows open. There is a program called Network File Share for Chrome OS. For those of you who want to access your Windows network file shares, the SMB system message block, or Samba if you're a Linux person. It lets you do that. So right from that, you can, if it's on your network, right, you've got a drive on your network or whatever, you can share data back and forth that way too.
Oh.
It's called Network File Share for Chrome OS.
Oh, cool.
And it's from Google. So it's... It's direct from the source.
There's a couple of them I'm finding, and I want to make sure I get the actual Google one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Network File Share for Chrome OS.
Google.
Now you're at it. That's the one. And Steve's going to put that up on the thing. I think that's
just another
excellent.
Another good thing by Google.
Another good thing by Google. Can't argue with that. Nope. All right.
Well, and SMB was always the Windows file sharing. Apple had their own AFP. Unix has their own NFS. Everyone's using SMB now because Windows is everywhere.
Windows is everywhere.
And that's how the WannaCry exploit works through SMB.
Yep. All right, to the phones. But, of course, it won't work on a Chrome or anything
it'll
like
try.
That.
It'll try. Yeah. It'll attach to the server, but it can't do anything when it gets to the other end.
All dressed up, no place to go.
That goes back to the earlier question, caller who asked about an external hard drive. Yeah, it'll attack an external hard drive, and it will attack any other Windows machine on your network,
because
it can see it over the network.
Right.
Yeah.
So make sure file sharing is turned off. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will turn file sharing on because it's convenient to pass files between their home computers.
Right. And yep. and it's fine if you're unmounting drives and yep. only mounting them when you're doing the backup.
Yep. Yeah. Did you see NCIS a couple of weeks ago with Bruce Boxleitner? Who's in town today? Rochester Flower City Comic Con is running, so
right.
this weekend. Bruce Boxleitner is in town. He was an admiral who got infected with ransomware,
right?
And called our hero Tim to clean him out, and Tim said, "Well, just pay it. It's only like $500." So well, I'm not going to pay that, and so then he because part of the ransomware, and this is true, I've seen this. Part of the ransomware is if you forward the ransomware and infect your friends, if they pay the ransom, the bad guy will mark that for you and unlock your files. So you infect all your friends, you get your files for free. So the admiral forwarded the ransomware to the major case squad, and then everyone got infected, and suddenly it became a big thing. And turned out to be a murder mystery ring, and a sailor was involved, and Navy guy was involved. So it was part of the plot. But
yeah.
I love it how these shows are starting to take real-world things and putting them into television.
Yep.
Because people believe the television,
yeah, right.
not necessarily the news.
I saw it. Well, it's got to be true.
I have friends in law enforcement who say the real problem is things like NCIS, where now juries expect
yeah.
every forensic scientist to be Abby.
Yep.
You yeah. know, when you go to trial and they say, well, it'll be another 2 weeks before we get the DNA results. Well, that's not true. Abby does it in an hour.
Yeah.
Well, Abby does it in between commercials, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Thanks for being patient. Andy, what's up?
Hey, Nick. Congratulations for your daughter.
Thank you very much.
And for you for getting the biggest pay raise of your life.
Exactly right. Boy, you ain't kidding, buddy.
And now you can start diverting that to the wedding fund.
Yeah, shut up. Well, our next caller. On to the next caller. What's
not
up?
Rushing it. Just, you know,
yeah.
future planning. Okay, a few weeks ago you and I had talked about how to make a Windows 10 media for my computer.
Right.
And I did go to the address you gave me at Microsoft, and I start reading the page at Microsoft that I am confronted with a number of different choices, none of which make, or a lot of which don't make any sense to me, which is a real surprise on a Microsoft site.
Yeah.
The machine was originally built as a Windows 7 Pro machine. I did the free upgrade to the Windows 10 Pro, and that's what's running currently. Now, I am confronted with all these different choices, and maybe I'm overthinking this, but the last product key I had was off the 7 Pro. And
right.
I still have the holographic sticker and the whole bit. One of the choices are Windows 7 to Windows 10 upgrade, Windows 10 box, and I'm looking at it going, okay, I currently have a Windows 10 box. 7's not still on the machine that I'm aware of.
Right.
But your license.
And so if I want media to install, it's got to be the Windows 10 media. However, it's going to want a key, and the only key I have, because they didn't give me a new key when they gave me the new Windows 10, is the Windows 7 Pro key that I have on the holograph.
Right. Your Windows 10 license is an extension of your Windows 7 license. So if you were to install on a clean, empty machine, you need to install Windows 7 first, then with the key you have, then do the Windows 10 upgrade to use that license. I haven't tried it, but I don't think you can put a Windows 7 license key into the Windows 10 install if you install from a clean machine.
That's a very good question. I don't have an answer for that either, but it is quite likely that if you do, it's still registered at Microsoft. So
yeah.
It'll now come back as a Windows 10 registration. But I don't honestly know that. I'm just guessing.
Okay. Is there some way to find out?
We're asking Google right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. We asked Google about Windows. All right.
Yeah.
I was thinking there might be...
There's probably something on Microsoft somewhere.
Yeah. Is there any kind of a customer service number I could call?
Yeah. And that's
I know.
Well, actually, that's another big problem we run into. People will Google, you know, customer service numbers. We had a customer that thought they were calling HP. It turned out they were calling a fake tech support company who got into their computer and did nasty things. You have to be very careful when you're looking for phone numbers that you find the right company.
Well, if you go to Microsoft website and say customer service,
Right, you'll find it there. But most people just type it into their search engine and call the first number that comes up.
Well, I got to be honest. If I'm dealing with Microsoft, I don't do anything from anywhere other than Microsoft's website.
Yep. Right.
Just because I don't trust them to give me answers that through any other source, because they're just so persnickety that way.
Yep. Well, I found one link that says the Windows 7 and 8 keys will work with Windows 10 through the anniversary update. Which was the last major update. I don't know if that still works with the creator update, which is the current version.
What you need is a digital entitlement, which is essentially just a digital license, right? It's a method of activating Windows 10 that doesn't require you to enter a product key. If you upgraded Windows 10 for free from an eligible device running a genuine copy of 7 or 8.1, you have a digital license. Which means, theoretically, if you were to reinstall with that same license, you would be fine.
The problem becomes if you try to install it on a different computer, or if you replace a component in your computer, now Microsoft thinks that is a different computer, and it may not work. And in that case, I've seen, we've had customers where this has happened. You replace the hard drive, and it thinks you got a new computer. You have to call Microsoft physically on the phone and convince them that you just replaced the hard drive in your computer so that they'll let it reactivate. Because generally speaking, you know, one license goes on one computer.
Right.
But according to Microsoft, because you upgraded to 10 from 7 or 8, you have a current digital license that does not require you to enter a product key.
Okay, so to circle back around to my original question, so when I go to the Microsoft site and I tell them I want to create a bootable flash drive that I have, I've purchased for this purpose exactly, then I would select the one that says current version of Windows.
Right.
10.
Near as I can tell, yes.
Okay.
Theoretically, what it does is it creates that disk essentially from the version of Windows that's on your machine, including that digital license that's embedded in it.
And that's probably stored on Microsoft's activation server.
And then, it's a key that goes to Microsoft's activation server and says, oh, you're legit. If you did have to install, reinstall, you should be okay, because once you do that, you get the same set of wireless drivers that you had before, and they'll then make contact with Microsoft and you're activated, so you're good.
We have seen some interesting problems when the activation server is down, which usually happens late Friday after everyone goes home.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly when your computer checks the activation server every now and then to see if you're still legitimate, millions of people have woken up to find their computer thinks it's a pirate now because it can't talk to the activation server.
Hmm. Right, but in general, you should be fine.
So wait until Monday morning when somebody's back in and fixes the server.
Or until someone notices all the outcry and runs back into the office and fixes it.
Yeah, right. All right. That sounds reasonable. I'll move forward then.
Yep. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
We see the same thing with SSL certs. That it expires. When you're issued a security certificate, it should never expire on a Friday.
Boy, that's true.
Or a holiday. Or a holiday weekend.
Yep.
So just have them always expire on, say, Wednesday.
Yeah, right.
Then you don't have to worry, because, we've had calls, here for that, too. I'm trying to go to this website, and it says the invalid certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Great that you noticed that. Your browser will tell you if there's a problem with the security of a website.
Yep.
It's great that you noticed. It's great that you looked. And it's great that you called us to see what the problem was. Yeah. Most people just say, continue.
Yeah.
And you might, it might be a fake website. Have you heard about PuniCode?
Who?
The PuniCode exploit.
I have.
So there's this thing called PuniCode, and I'll post a link to it. So many people are familiar with ASCII, especially us old timers, which is how to represent letters on your computer. So there's only 127 letters possible, which isn't enough for most languages.
Oh, I see.
So Unicode Foundation came out and created Unicode, which is a double byte code, and there's 65,000 characters available. So that's where we're getting all these emojis from. Emojis are extended Unicode that are now part of your font. But many web browsers can't display Unicode in the address bar. And so that's been an exploit for a while. Is say there's a fake PayPal. You know, we've talked about paypa1.com, but the one looks like an L, so you think you're there. Well, another one we saw was paypal.calpha.m, and the alpha looks like an O, and so that's really close. So there's this Punicode extension, which is a translation of Unicode into ASCII. And there was a proof of concept where a researcher was able to create a website that looked exactly like Apple.com. It had a security certificate issued, a valid security certificate, because the actual address is XX-YZ439, you know, some random characters. But your browser displays Apple.com because it's translating the Unicode to Punicode to ASCII. And so there are mitigations to turn off Punicode in your browser, and we'll get those posted in a minute too, so that it always displays the actual text of the URL you're going to cut down on the problems of getting caught by one of these Punicode exploits.
Nice. It's a you know, there are a billion ways to spoof people, to fake people out into going to bad websites. And this is just one more where you can't even believe your own eyes.
And this one even gets the little green security padlock that we've been telling people to look for, because it is encrypted with a valid certificate
right
to the site you're not really at.
Right, right, right. It's getting worse out there, folks, and you've got to be more and more vigilant. We used to have – well, that's interesting – we used to have an easy time of it. You know, if you were a Windows user, you could truly just be a Windows user. But nowadays, and then if you wanted to be a Mac user, you could just be a Mac user. If you wanted to be a Linux user, then you kind of had to be a little bit of a system administrator. The problem now is, every operating system, you really have to be a systems administrator. You have to know about backups. You have to know about security. You have to know about things like Punicode. It's just everywhere, and it's ridiculous.
The exploit doesn't work on my Mac with Safari. I'm not sure if that's because it doesn't support Punicode or it knows it's not really Apple. So as soon as I post this link, try it in your Chrome and see if Chrome does it.
So it's just getting worse. It's also known as the IDN homograph attack, if you want to look it up on Wikipedia. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Smiley from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Smiley?
Hey, you probably heard about it, it's a Riot. It's a more secure IRC, I guess.
What's it called?
Riot, R-I-O-T. Some fellow from RIT, in fact, I think his dad was on my little league team and was a in one of my bowling programs. He sent a notice on Luger this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of it as an IRC product. It's a team communication product. I didn't think of it in terms of IRC, but it really is kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Oh yeah, well, yeah. I was looking at it. It's got free node, a whole bunch of other that you can hook through on it, and that, and I guess it's supposed to be more secure.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I have not used it, but you should be able to chat and even call and all kinds of different things using this product.
Well, RIC, you can do that too, but I mean, I guess the way I read this is that, you know, it's even more secure. Of course, I don't know how often IRC gets hacked, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares anymore.
IRC is used commonly for the command and control structure of all of the bots and hackers.
Right.
Yeah. So similar to this program, similar to something like Threema or Signal. I wonder if it uses the Signal protocol, which is sort of now become the standard for secure communications.
I'm sitting here right now. I brought it up on my box here. It's the RiotOS.org.
Yeah.
Yep.
Looks like a pretty cool little product. I will check it out. Interesting. I'm on riot.im.
For instant messaging. Yeah.
Right, for the instant messaging part.
As more and more reports are coming out about not just the bad guys, but the good guys spying on us, more and more people want to use secure communications. The danger is, in fact, and I've heard from some developers who have stopped development of secure communication products, is they're afraid that the government is going to mandate some sort of a backdoor into all secure communications. So that if the theory is, with a valid warrant, you know, say the people at Riot would have to turn over all of your chats. The danger becomes if the good guys have a backdoor, the bad guys will find it and use it. There have been issues where lawful orders have been issued erroneously or to the wrong place. So that can always be a problem too. So we're cat and mouse game between the good guys and the bad guys, and we the people are sort of stuck in the middle.
Yeah, but you can get encrypting programs too, where they can't. The only way you have to give, like, if I want Nick and I to do encrypted messages, I'd have to hand pass the key to him. So then actually the two of us had, and it didn't matter our ISPs or anything. There's nothing they could do about it.
There's the fear that the government will mandate all security programs like that require a backdoor for government access. And so what we typically end up saying is then the bad guys will just use the old versions that don't have that backdoor in it.
Right.
And so only the bad guys will be able to speak privately.
Right. You're very right, Steve, that more and more people are becoming concerned about privacy. Duo is privacy, end-to-end. Allo is privacy, end-to-end. So this Riot looks like it does that, at least with some of the stuff. It doesn't say it about the group chat, though.
So they're using Ohm, which is an implementation of Double Ratchet. I don't know. I haven't heard of that protocol yet. I do know several of the apps are using Signal. WhatsApp uses Signal.
WhatsApp is that way, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's end-to-end encrypted. Now, Threema is an interesting one. You got three little dots depending on what your level of encryption are. And as Smiley said, if you do a face-to-face key exchange, then you get all three dots. Because it's not just encrypted, you also are able to prove this is who it says it is.
Right.
So I can make an encryption key that says, hey, I'm Nick Francesco, and send it to you, and you think it's Nick Francesco. So that you'd only get two dots there, because it is encrypted, but not to who you think.
Right. Right. And interesting catch there, Smiley. I like it. Thanks.
Okay, buddy. Glad to let you know.
Yep.
Yep.
Right. Bye-bye.
Interesting. Yeah, a lot of places.
Double Ratchet is from Moxie Marlin Spike, who also does Signal. So they are related, at least. That's good.
Right.
So, and that's the problem. Some companies will try to do the secure messaging, and they'll make up their own encryption. Well, encryption is done. We know how to do it. The RSA and With Diffie. Diffie Hellman Key Exchange. We know how to do that. Stop making your own. Use the ones we know work. Because there's always something weird that happens. So, in fact, there's one I just heard about on Security Now, where they were trying to be clever with their passwords. Mm-hmm. So they were saying, yeah, the first digit has to be a letter, the second digit has to be a number, the fourth digit has to be a symbol, thinking that's really secure. No, that's less secure, because then the bad guys know for the first digit, I only have to scan for numbers.
Yeah. Right.
I don't have to look at letters, so that's much less secure.
You've just helped them out greatly.
Yep.
Right, but there's Slack, and there's Matrix, and OFTC, and SnooNet, and a bunch of others. What's SnooNet?
I don't know. What's SnooNet with you?
Ba-dum-bum. Thank you. We'll be here all
try
week.
Try the meal. We're out of kettle water.
What's a hen weigh?
About a pound.
Pound and a half. What's a Greek urn? About $5.95 in the open market.
Or what weighs more, a ton of flowers or a ton of bricks?
Right.
Now, the sneaky one is what weighs more, a ton of feathers or a ton of silver?
Ton of feathers.
Yes, because silver is measured in troy ounces, which is less than androinith, whatever. I always wanted to say androgynous ounces.
Right. Oh. So encryption is becoming, of course, more and more important. When you are on something, like we've talked about this before in terms of email, if I log into the web-based version of Gmail, it is encrypted between me and Google server. If I send a message to someone else who is on Google server, it is encrypted there. And then if they read it through the browser, it is encrypted down to them. So it's end-to-end encryption, and it works great.
And many companies use that for their own internal, you know, Apple-to-Apple, Google-to-Google, Microsoft-to-Microsoft.
Right. The problem is when you go between makers or when you go off the web protocol. So, for example, if I use Eudora or Thunderbird or Evolution or Exchange to look at my Gmail, there is no guarantee that the encryption privacy is maintained.
Most of the big services now do allow you to turn on SSL, which is a setting in your mail program, so that the data is encrypted on your computer before it goes out over the public internet. But you can't guarantee that unless you know your service, your mail provider and your mail client both have to support that.
Yep. And it also depends on how high end the SSL algorithm is that you use. Is it, you know, how many bits? Obviously, a 2048 bit encryption is a lot better than a 512 bit encryption.
Yeah.
And again, a little slower, but you know what? Nowadays, it honestly does not matter.
And that's been the problem. As computers have grown more capable, in the early days we had weak encryption because the computers just couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you know, you probably have heard, you know, 1024, 40, 2048, 4096 bit encryption. The more bits you have, the harder it is to crack. But many web browsers and web servers still support the older encryptions.
Right.
And there's a classic attack called a downgrade attack. So when your web browser goes to connect to a server, if you get, you know, usually from a spoofed email, you go to a maliciously crafted server, the server says, oh, I don't support, you know, AES. I only support MD5. Which is an old encryption that has been weakened and broken, and so then your browser goes, ooh, okay, and now now the bad guy can do everything they want. And that's one of the reasons why XP is not secure anymore, is it doesn't support the newest protocols. So if you go to a website with XP, it's only going to handle MD5 if you're lucky. Or what was the one before that? That's even worse. Forget the name. It was good because we don't want to use it anymore.
Right.
So that you cannot get proper encryption because your browser's too old to support the new encryptions.
Right. Well, gosh, that music tells me we're done. Okay. Bye bye. Oh, wait, I should probably say something here. I want to say thank you to everyone who called in. I want to say congratulations to my daughter. I want to say we had so much fun today. Thank you all very much. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back here with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you. Oh, don't go away. George is here to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we will see you in 166 hours. Bye-bye.